Welcome back, holy cow, to the Black Art Podcast with me, Lloyd.
Me, Jake, back once again to the Renegade Master.
Whoa, man. It's been 2 weeks. I say that with a concerned look on my face.
It feels like we've put out one episode in about 2 months.
No, hasn't really. No,
I think
it
it's
hasn't
close to
been
that.
that long.
I mean, over the span of 2 months, I think there's only been one episode.
Blimey. Oh, this is entirely down to me, everyone that's listening. We see your calls for us to come back on the air. Last week was the worst week of my life. And I spent the entirety of it sick in bed. And Kaylee also broke her ankle. So, and other stuff going on. But yeah, so I was like off the grid. This is how sick I was, Jake. This is the depth of how sick I was. I had my phone. This is the modern era of definition of sick. I had my phone on airplane mode for 4 days.
It's bad, dude.
Yeah. And then Kaylee broke her leg. And we have a 3-year-old that's beyond hyperactive, so figure that out.
I'm sure no one there's no like begrudgment going on, don't worry. People are very understanding.
Yeah, well, I hope so. Sorry if you've missed us. How have you been, man? How have you been keeping?
We were talking a little bit earlier, with kind of related to the podcast. I've been experiencing a bit of a creative death at the moment, purely just from like, I mean, it's one of those like shit happens kind of things. Sometimes it's just hard to get it up.
Creative dry spell.
Yeah.
You need to find your oasis.
I need to find my Viagra. But still, when that's happening, it's good. It's still good to try. Because I was thinking about this the other day, and I was thinking about it earlier, actually. You know, whenever someone has like a 9-to-5 job, I would estimate that like probably a majority of people don't really enjoy their job.
Yeah.
Maybe that's harsh or unfair, maybe like 60% or something, but I don't think many people want to be working their specific job they're in. But you still have to go in at 9 in the morning and do your job. So I've kind of been feeling that way the past week, and I've still been getting up early, going for a walk and recording voice notes and trying to come up with stuff. I think it's important, even if you are just getting back home and then curling up into bed and crying.
That's a really interesting way of looking at it. I've never really thought about it that way before, but it's true. I've definitely, yeah. I mean, it's impossible to not have the creative dry spells, the drought, the bleakness of it. But I've never thought of it as, well, it's just part of the job. Not every day, no matter what you do. Do you want to wake up and go into the office, so to speak, the proverbial office, or?
Yeah.
But I'm sorry you've been going through that, man. Has there been any tips or tricks that you've helped keep you maybe not focused being the right word, but keep you pushing?
It's hard. It's hard because everyone's different, especially when it comes to something as nebulous as creativity, because it's one of those kind of, it's smoke, isn't it? It's trying to grab hold of it. So it's hard to have any specific advice, but I think it is always. It's always just got to be a case of still at least trying, even if it's something small, you know, moving the goalposts so that you can get like an easy win. Like,
Yeah.
I think the other day I was working on something. I think I sent a video of it to you, but it was whilst you were in your death phase of airplane mode.
Oh, yeah, I haven't watched that video.
Yeah, it was
Sorry,
literally,
man.
no, don't be silly. It was whenever I'm stuck creatively, I'll think of what is a common trick, what is a well-known effect, and what is a different way you could do it. Because that way, half of the job is kind of done for you, and you can focus on the actual just creative aspects of it. So you're giving yourself an easy win. So everyone knows what the plot of a haunted deck is. Can you come up with a new method? You're only focusing on one part of the creativity then. So I was looking at a two-card transposition, just like, you know, every street magician's favorite, you know, a traditional opener. As much as like whatever type of magician you are, you can be the hardest of core mentalists. You probably still enjoy doing a two-card transposition because it's a piece of piss and it
Yeah,
gets the
yeah.
best reactions out of any card trick. And I was just trying to come up with a fun way to do that. And because a lot of the the taxing elements of it, like the structure of it, the plot of it, is kind of done for you. You can focus on the fun bits. So I was playing around with a version where the cards are folded up and then placed in hands and seeing what the reactions were by doing it like that. And then how could you add a phase that hasn't been done before? And the reason that I messaged you about it, which is you might be able to help me right now. The second phase of the two card transposition was having a gimmick card on the underside of the deck. So when the cards came back to you, if someone asked to see it again, you could place the cards down, and now there is a gimmick card that's been switched into play. And you say, I can show you again, and I'll just do it just with me. So off the bot what is now the bottom of the deck, you can then pick up a card and perform the same effect, but just with you. So you fold it up and place it in your hands, and you're saying you can watch it in slow motion this time. And then when you unfold it, it becomes a different card.
Oh,
And
wow, that's cool.
so the reason that I wanted to do that was because maybe their memories will get mixed up about how the initial phase of the effect went, because they've
Yeah,
watched
they
it
will.
happen like this. And also, you can ditch that in the same way that you switched it. You just put it down on top of the deck, quickly turn it
Pick
over, and
the
say,
deck up,
check the
yeah.
cards. But the reason I messaged you is because, and I'm showing on the camera, I know people can't see this, it is just like literally two cards glued together. And I wanted to
In
know
a
if there
T
was a.
shape, like a flap card, basically.
Yeah. I just wanted to
And
know
if and you can.
if you knew of a better way to make a gimmick like this that would be maybe more suited to that effect.
I'm not sure if I know a better gimmick. I've seen that gimmick before.
Yeah.
It's like a, it's just a it, yeah flap card, and then you folded it into quarters so you can open it up as two different cards. It's very good. It's really good. Is there a better way of doing it? I know actually. I won't name the names because I'm sure if he's still under NDA or not. But there's a version of French Kiss that Dynamo create didn't create, sorry, he performed for in his live tour. It's a so he does French Kiss by Wayne Houchin, but there's a magician, there's a bit for the magicians in the audience. It's a signed version, and he goes to fold the card up, put it in his mouth, then he stops, unfolds it, shows it that it hasn't changed yet, then he folds it back up, puts it back in his mouth, then when he opens it, it's changed almost exactly like your card there. So you can imagine it works in the same, well, without divulging anything, and in fairness, I don't know the exact method, but I been around enough. You'd assume that what the method is, but the cool part of it is that it locks. So,
Oh,
like, yeah, you could kind of hand it out afterwards.
that's interesting.
And there's some interesting ways about, yeah. So, I mean, like, have you ever seen things like Ben Williams's One Card Link? You could apply that type of thinking to an effect like that, so that you can show it as one card, change to another, and then the I'm doing the air quotes, the stuff, the special stuff, then would make it lock in place, and it wouldn't be able to be backtracked.
That's interesting.
Yeah,
I did.
super cool.
I was thinking about bit because obviously this was just, as you said, it is essentially kind of just like French kiss without placing the cards in your mouth. But I was just playing around with different
Well,
phases.
French Chris is just a two-card transpo,
Yeah,
isn't it?
yeah. But it's very, very interesting because I love tricks like that almost fall into public domain just because everyone does them, even though they're not public domain necessarily. And they've a lot of the heavy lifting is done because it's just everyone knows how to do it. So you might as well try and come up with a new way of doing it.
Oh, yeah. Things like this are my absolute favorite plots to explore. And the two card transpo is probably like my top three most explored card plot in terms of trying to come up with. I do a and it's the most base it's pretty much the most basic thing you could imagine, so it doesn't take too much to go over. But since I was about 16, the way I always did, so like you think of the Blaine type of standard two card transpo, having a duplicate card. It means you can get the X card signed, even like French Kiss, for example. But the way I've always done it, it's always been impromptu, so no duplicates. And the way that I discovered, I think I must have been about I always like sort of, because I moved around so a lot, I know where I was when I came up with certain ideas, and I must have been about 14 years old, so I lived in a certain house at that time with a cul-de-sac. And everyone's probably done this, but if you change the moment of when the change happens and where the attention is, you can do it pretty much impromptu. So basically, turning over a double, having it signed, turn that double back down, and placing that card, which is now an X card, off to the side or in participant A's hand. Then you turn over the next double, and you have that card signed, and you place that in participant B's hand. Return to participant A, pick up that card face down, and at this point is normally where you'd be able to show that they've changed. Or you would do a color change, or you would just, you'd have that duplicate ready. But since that's a random card, you just simply can't show that card yet that they've changed. So all you do here is that you just like I'm doing the motions, but you wave that random X card face down over their hand, and or tap the back of their hand, whatever magical gesture, and you say, now the cards have switched places. And you instead of you turning your card over, you wait for them to look in their hand, and at that point you top change. And if you're not comfortable with the top change, just drop it on top of the deck and turn a double over. I there's literally no way on earth that I was the first to think of that. I think that's an impossible chance. I thought I did when I was 14, but it was just that epiphany of change in the moment allows you to do it impromptu with two signed cards, and all you're doing it, and to the audience is exactly the same trick. Except you're not turning over one card and it becomes another, and then they check their hands. They're checking their hands first, and then the card in your hand, and you
Well,
just reverse it.
it makes sense as well, like to them, because if their card has changed, then obviously your card will have changed. Yeah, it makes sense. The way that I've always performed it impromptu was I just am not specific about what my card is, and it's just a red queen.
Oh, that's a good way of doing it. So you just like an on the spot sort of do.
And I'll just call the two red queens to the top and use them as the instead of dupes, and just say, and I've got a red queen, and then they switch places.
One of the coolest things I ever seen was from Danny De Ortiz, and it won't spoil it because it was like a throwaway thing. I can't remember what it was, like a FISM lecture or something, and he showed this trick, and it is in one of his projects somewhere, but it's just the one element to it, and you've got to see the whole routine. But it was just all about that, like Red Queen. He does a trick where he has you think of a he flicks through the cards, and you think of a court card that you any court card that you see. And then that card vanishes from the deck, and it's completely impromptu. And and there's no sleight of hand. And the method is, and I've always tried to like recreate it, and I can never get it perfect, but there's definitely something to it. He takes all the spot cards that are hearts, puts them in a pile. Then he takes the Queen of Diamonds and puts it at the top of the pile, and he puts those in the middle of the deck, and he moves the other court cards out of the deck, right? And then when you flick through, you see 10 red heart spot cards, quick fire, and then one queen, which is red. But the thinking is that you see all these hearts, 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 and then you just see a queen of hearts. You think you've seen a queen of hearts, see a queen of hearts, and then so there's no actually queen of hearts in the deck. It's a queen of diamonds. So you go, and there's an excuse. And I won't see the whole routine, but you give them. There's a reason why they think of a court card that sees. You go. Think of any court card, cool, take them, shuffle them, name it out loud, it's vanished. And but yeah, that's an interesting, I always thought that was an interesting way of creating like an instant on the spot dupe in a weird way.
That's really cool. I'll have to give that a go. I don't know if I'm skilled enough with cards to pull off anything like that, but so you know, that kind of stemmed from you asking, is there a way that you get out of that creative block? Is there a way that you get out of it?
Do you know what? Yesterday, I did actually do something to get myself out of a creative block. And this is something I don't often do. I try my best to not look at other people's work just because you can fall so easily victim to, and I think there's no creator under the sun, unless they're being dishonest, that can say that they haven't independently thought they've created something that they've actually secretly seen before, and they don't realize it. I even did it with Matthew Wright and the wife test. I watched his first YouTube series. He did something called the wife test, which was him performing a trick on his wife, in like a cinematic way of performing the trick, like a cinematic filming of it. Seen it, I loved it. Thought it was great. A couple of months go by. I started a new section on my channel, which was having Kaylee critique tricks that she's seen. So a different type of thing, right? But essentially, me performing to my wife. And I couldn't think of a name, so I called it the wife test, thinking in my head that it was like the best name ever, and I'd come up with it. And then he sent me a message. He was like, "Dude, are you what?" And I honestly thought I created it. And it's one of those things. So anyway, that being said, I say that because I try my best not to look at other people's material because I want to keep my work as independent as possible. But every now and then, I cannot help myself but go on, especially if I'm in a creative funk. I will go through old Tenyo tricks,
Oh, yeah.
you know. And anyway, I did that. Actually, did that yesterday. I sat down for about an hour and a half, and I went through Tenyo effects. Not some of them have. I mean, they all have great methods. There's hardly any that don't have just amazing methods. But a lot of the time, just for the inspiration of the plot, you know. I love the vanishing point trick. That was one I was obsessing over yesterday, which is where you take a plinth and a little red ball. You place a folded card behind it so the ball can't, everyone knows the ball can't escape. And you put a fold, two folded cards in front of it, and somehow the ball vanishes. I just love that plot. And sorry, pardon me, my voice is croaky. But I did that and I was looking at a bunch of their different tricks. And so I did that yesterday and then I ended up, but I'm not, see, not because of a trick of any of theirs, there's no trick of theirs that they have out like this, but I ended up just because I was in that zone of thinking of, trying to think of clever methods, I came up with the trick that I showed, the one I showed you earlier on WhatsApp. I think that's going to be okay for a new YouTube video. I don't know about you, possibly.
I think so. I think it looks cool as fuck, man.
As long as it's like semi, it's like it is visual. It's going to be semi fooling to an extent as well. But so yeah, that's what I did. That was what I did. I thought it was a good exercise. I remember Eric Jones had a good one, which was, and this is the link. Remember, like sometimes you need someone to put something into context that you might already do before you could actually use it as a tool. Like years ago, we used to do this thing where we would run around jumping off stuff and doing flips, and believe it or not. But I used to love it, man. I was so sick of backflips. We used to do it, and we used to call it Yamakaze. And then this would come up, this guy called David Bell from France had created it, turned it into something called parkour. And that became a thing, and we were already really good at it because we'd been doing it for years by that point. But we never called it anything, you know, until it was capitalized. And I remember I used to do this thing from being poor where I would hear about a new trick that was coming out, and because there was no way I was ever getting it, just as simple as that. So I would create my own methods, and that was a thing, right? So I think that's probably why I ended up choosing this line of work. But Eric Jones does that as a practice. He will pick up a magic book, read a random effect from the book, and slam it shut without reading the method to sort of inspire the creativity and think, what way would I go about achieving this? And then when you reopen it, look at the method. If you've got yourself a new method from theirs, hey, you've just created a new piece of magic. It's a fucking brilliant, it's a brilliant way to do things. And I'm guessing all of us do that, right? We've all done that. We all hear of an effect. We hear of the checklist of the do's and the don'ts and can'ts and the cans, and then think about how you'd achieve it. But to actually put that, to actually contextualize it as, right, go off and do it specifically. Brilliant.
Yeah, it used to be one of my favorite things to do when I was a kid. It was just, well, I can't afford that. Looking on the old forums and stuff and watching the old videos where you would literally have to download them over the course of a whole day to watch a 2 minute long trailer and then try
Yeah,
and
oh
come
my
up with my
God.
method.
It's Real Media Player. Is that it? That was cool.
I think
Real Media or something?
Real Media was the like blue and black one, was it? I think.
Yeah.
Good
Well,
times.
here's an interesting thing. Actually, you text me this. I'd seen it yesterday, and Rich Relish just texted into our WhatsApp group about Dan and Dave.
Yeah, very interesting.
So, Dan and Dave, if you don't know, Dan and Dave are the twin Buck brothers. They didn't create cardistry, but they revolutionized cardistry and made it what it is today and started a cult, a religion. Not only did they do that, they're also some of the best sleight of hand artists in the world. And on top of that, annoyingly, sickeningly, their card magic is equally as fantastic. They are one of those types of people that are just not just good at everything, but they're masters of everything.
Yeah.
And anyway, so they put out like things like the trilogy. The only people that are not going to know who they are people that are just getting into magic because they sort of disappeared out of the scene. I once got like coffee with one of them in San Diego randomly, I think. Oh no, where was I? California. I can't remember where I was. I was in California. He'd got a train maybe or something with a bunch of us. I don't know.
Did they just disappear because of the buyout?
No, do you know what? I don't even want to speculate, but I
Yeah.
think they I think they're very good at business, and I don't think, yeah, either way, that being said, so they have created, and over the last few, of the decades of their life, they have created a body of work that will be remembered for the rest of time. And it's sort of no one sees it anymore. It was sort of locked away. Not locked away. You can buy the download and the DVDs, but they don't publish anymore. Yesterday they put up a post saying, "Today, April 29th, 2024, we dedicated our entire body of original work in sleight of hand magic and cardistry to the public domain under the Creative Commons Zero license. By doing so, we relinquish our copyright and claim to originality, making our works freely available worldwide. The CCO license allows anyone to distribute, remix, adapt, or build upon our material in any medium or format without conditions, even for commercial purposes. We hope this act of opening our creations to the world will ignite creativity and innovation in others, pushing the boundaries of what is possible in our art." Holy fucking shit.
Yeah, especially considering it's Creative Commons Zero, and it's not even just Creative Commons, which is even more generous
I don't
because
even know what that is, so you need to explain it to me, please.
was so I've worked with Creative Commons a lot purely from putting out certain things where I might use pieces of music that are licensed under a Creative Commons, so they can be used so long as they're attributed, and so long as you say this piece of music was from this person, you can go find the website here. That's basically the fee for using it. Creative Commons Zero, I'm pretty sure it doesn't require attribution. Maybe you should check that up beforehand, but essentially it means there's no copyright protection or data, but like any kind of database protection or anything. And it just means it's a bit of a free for all almost. Like they hold no rights to it, whereas someone who has a who's put something out with Creative Commons still holds the rights to it. It's just that they're giving away the licensing for free. But Creative Commons Zero
Right.
is kind of just giving it all up.
It's just fuck. I mean, I like we're, first of all, out of this world. Like that is unbelievable that they did that.
Very cool.
Talk about leaving a legacy in magic and cardistry. I can't even like wrap my head around it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
What a greater than themselves gift to the
Yeah.
world.
I have no idea how it's going to operate, whether that means they're literally going to archive the work just publicly available and you can use anything from it however you want, or whether there is more terms to it than just that. But either way, it's great.
Yeah, I don't even know. Yeah, I don't even. There's so much good that can come from it. Obviously, the worst thing would be that there were that some the worst thing that could happen in a situation like this would that someone would come along and profit off their name. But however, they're saying, have at it, go for it,
Yeah, which is what you
which
usually
is.
find when something becomes public domain. Someone collates it all into a book and then sells it as if it's like an official release of some kind. Which you can find that a million copies of Sherlock Holmes books on Amazon because certain ones of them are in public domain. So people just package them themselves and put out their own editions of it. So
I
you're
mean, Expert
probably
at the
going to get
Card
a few
Table.
people. Yeah, exactly. You're probably going to get a few people doing that with some stuff, but I find it more interesting what people will build on.
Yeah. It won't be long before a lot of other artists start doing this. I think that's the thing, that Buck Twins are huge trendsetters. Like, there's going to be, you can see some names popping up in the comments section on here. Like, I wouldn't be like, Madison's in the comments. I wouldn't be surprised if he did something like this now
Yeah.
after this. But this is just someone's just put. So does this mean all of their magic products on Vanishing Ink are free? No, it doesn't mean that. Yeah, how are people? Yeah, because that's the one thing, right? I have so many little tricks that I do, little tips and slights and bits and pieces. Not Dan and Dave's. I don't know if I do any of Dan and Dave's stuff specifically, but like for other artists, and they're not really different enough for me to do anything. Like, they're different enough. They have their own unique abilities, but I would never consider it enough as a release. But seeing something like this, it sort of gives you that creative freedom to play.
Yeah, well, that's what their whole ethos kind of is as well, anyway, isn't it? Even some of the work they've put out was purely the pursuit of, this artistry and cardistry from something specifically being hard to master. I mean, they're known for like the almost impossible knuckle busters, and
Yeah.
they do have that sense of almost like an art about it. Like, there's a reason for these things, or it's just this, I don't know, it's very, very strange.
Yeah, but they're gonna leave. This is a huge, huge thing, and I'm interested to see what the ramifications will be. Will somebody come out and recreate the trilogy in their own hands? Because that someone could come up and be like, right, I'm gonna take trilogy, the card slides and everything else section, and I'm going to put my spin on every single part of it, and here it is.
Yeah, there's probably going to be a lot of YouTube tutorials over the next few months.
Yeah, I know. Well, some people do them on Dan and Dave's material anyway, which is fucking
Yeah.
crazy, terrible stuff. But yeah, big ups to them, man. I'd love to do something like that. I mean, it's funny. I've always seen that putting like the YouTube tutorials up that I do is, to an extent, like giving it away for free, like giving away your creative license to it for free.
Yeah.
I don't really, I don't ask. I always find it funny when people tag me when they upload a thing, especially if like there are if people's target audience are magicians, then I don't get weirded out by it at all, because I get it. But when people are like, have you know they. Someone they got like a million followers and they perform to the public and they tag me. I'm thinking, like, why do you do that? Because you don't want the public to know that these tricks are created by magicians.
Yeah.
Like, and it's up on YouTube, so it's sort of public domain. The only time I personally get weirded out about it is when people try and profit off my stuff. Because my business is in the product industry, and I create products. I'm currently selling it. Whereas Dan and Dave, I suppose they're not in that at the minute. They're not putting the roof over their heads with their card tricks right now.
Yeah. It is strange. It's one of them things that when you get into it, it just becomes so strange to even think about or speak about, because if you come up with a move or a gimmick, like, there is nothing there to protect you. There is nothing. It's a well-known fact. It's just, unless you go through a load of patents, which give it away anyway, there's no protection to anything anyone ever makes. So anything I ever put out for free as well, I always put out in the knowledge that someone might use this for their own profit, whatever. Someone might use it for, I don't know, nefarious means.
That's it. I'm with you. And the way I say profit on it is like, if someone like I my Sharpie through card, right? Probably the most viewed video I got. Unique method, it's mine. It's original. If someone was to put that out as Sharpie through card by XYZ, whatever place, and it's exactly the same, to me, like, that's like, whoa, what the fuck, man? Like,
Yeah.
it's literally not yours. And I wonder if Dan and Dave, I know they've completely given the zero license, but if somebody, I'm trying to think of what's their favorite, they've got loads of like Molecule 5, right? That's a cardistry slide. So if someone took the Molecule 5, someone called John, John Doe. John Doe practices the cut, the Molecule 5 cut, and then releases it as an instant download on Penguin Magic, and he calls it Molecule 5 created by John Doe. Like, and then profits off it. That to me is where it's like, oh.
Yeah, it is strange because it's not an industry that can be comparable to anything else. Because if you if there is,
Music's the closest,
yeah,
you know,
kind of,
licensing.
yeah. But so a lot of people are like, there are some legends in music who put out Creative Commons stuff that you can use in commercial features, even like Kevin
Nine
McLeod's
Inch Nails do a
in the
lot of stuff
industry.
like that.
Yeah, Trent Reznor's big on Creative Commons and stuff like that. There's a guy called Scott Oakley, I think his name is, who I use a lot of his music and stuff and credit him for it. But then there are people who put out Creative Commons Zero with music, and it's like, here is a beat. If any rapper wants to use it, feel free to. And I mean, that hip hop, or the entire history of hip hop is sampling and using people's stuff with or without permission sometimes.
Yeah, I suppose like going back to like that what's it called, somebody purely profiting off fucking like the Molecule 5, for
Yeah.
example. I suppose it comes down to integrity, doesn't it? And like the community around you. Then, you know, like the peers, your peers. So like if that John Doe, put it out, you know, rightfully show them some of the magic, and you should be like, well. You know, you don't even at least fucking credit the guys. They said they don't want profit, but credit them. Don't pretend you made it up. You know, it should come down to
Yeah.
that kind of thing.
Yeah, which I guess would be the same then as a bunch of different companies having their own editions of Expert at the Card Table.
Yeah, but anyway, super interesting that he did that, and I think that they both did that, and hats off to them. Super
Yeah,
inspiring, isn't it?
it is super inspiring. I've got like a there's some stuff where I'm thinking now I'm just gonna slap that on it. Might as
Yeah.
well. Like, people would use it anyway, but I might as well put it on there.
Do you have to go through a process to it, or do you just say, look, I don't care, go?
I think you can just say this is released under Creative Commons License Zero. There's like a copy and paste on the official Creative Commons website that you can use on the bottom of things and stuff like that.
That's cool.
But with music, one thing that always comes up with Creative Commons releases is someone will put it out completely for free, just credit me in like the description. Someone else will say that's their song. So a million videos on YouTube are suddenly claimed because someone said that this music was theirs.
Oh, wow.
There's many, many issues that it can cause, but it is also like I'm super huge on it because I come from a very DIY punk background where a lot of the stuff that I used to make, whether it was music or whether it was, publishing stuff, it was just have at it, do what you want. Like, it's art, it's out
Yeah.
there.
Yeah, I'm always of the I'm super freestyle with like my sort of work being used. It's just I'm always funny if, well, no, I'm not even funny about it. I'm militant. If someone tries to take my idea and sell it as their own, I'm like, fuck off.
Yeah. Yeah, I need to get a little bit better at stuff like that.
Yeah. But we haven't created a trick in this episode yet, Jake.
We haven't. Okay. You want to create a trick?
Shit. You
Setting
put me on
yourself
the
up for
spot.
failure now, Lloyd.
You put me completely on the spot now.
Okay, well, what about this then?
No,
What
I love it. Go
about
on,
we
go
go
on.
down the easy route and can we come up, because we were talking about it, can we come up with a way of presenting or a way of doing a two-card transposition completely different to anything else?
Okay, yes, we can. We are
Okay,
allowed.
we're
Tell
allowed.
me where your head goes to first.
Where my head goes to first was because I had a watch on the table in front of me, was if you had already pre-planted a folded card under someone's watch, and then you involve that in a two-card transposition.
Okay. So they don't know it's planted under there?
Yeah. Because that's the maybe that's the hand that the you place a card on, so it's face down. Well, sorry. You know what I mean? Knuckle down.
I have an idea.
Okay.
All right. So let's say the card that's secretly loaded under their watch is a two of hearts.
Yes.
Okay. They don't know this. And then you begin the trick. I'm going to hold my hand out, Jake. I'm going to take a deck of cards. I'm going to give them a shuffle. I'm going to turn over the top card, and it's a three of clubs. All
Yes.
right. I'm going to turn that three of clubs over and hold it face down. And I'm actually going to place it on the palm of your hand. So hold your hand out flat. Make sure it's the hand with the watch. So that apparent three of clubs is now on the palm of your hand. Right?
Yeah.
Face down. I now turn over the next card in the deck, and it is a two of hearts, apparently. Okay. So I take the two of hearts and turn it over. And what I'm going to do is this. I'm going to fold that two of hearts up into quarters. I'm going to turn my hand down, and I'm going to place it underneath my watch like this. Right? Okay. So I say, under my watch, I have a two of hearts. And on your on the palm of your hand, you have the three of clubs. This is what's going to happen. I'm going to hold my hand out, obviously palm down, and say, don't look away. And I slowly begin to turn my hand over, rotating it 180 degrees. I stop. And I say the trick is done. I say, slowly pick up that three of clubs from your palm and drop it onto mine. You do that. Okay. Now I turn that card over and it's two of hearts. I turn my palm back around and the folded up card has vanished. And now, under the watch, the folded up card. So it's transposed physically
Hell yeah.
as well as, like, as well as, well, physically in two senses. You know, it's
Now,
not just changed, the card is also moved.
I love that.
Think of that, you know, something along the lines of that.
I love that.
I mean,
Love
that's
that.
a cool trick anyway, right? You preload the card on someone's watch, da, 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 da. Now you take a dupe of it, fold it up, you say, watch this, I'm gonna place it in my hand, turn my hand over, turn it back, it's gone. Look under your watch.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. That method's kind of inconsequential as well, because there's a million ways to skin a cat.
Oh yeah, you could just put it under your watch, and as you turn it over, you push it under further so it's hidden. So when you
Yeah.
turn it back, they just can't see it. You say, look, the card's gone. And before they have a chance to look, you say, under your watch. And you know, so it could be like when you put it in, it's just when you first put it in, it's sticking out a lot. And as you turn your hand around, you just, or you have it on a piece of elastic thread, so you know it comes, it's held in place or whatever.
Yeah. Piece of piss.
Or when you have your when you place the card on the palm face down, you steal it from underneath the wrist, maybe, you know.
Well, this is like completely, it doesn't matter whatsoever, but just thinking, if you have like the two ripped corners of a card there that were already
Yeah.
underneath your card, underneath your watch. So they can
Oh
actually be hidden
yeah.
completely under the wallet, the watch. And if you just false transferred the folded piece
Yeah.
to this,
Yeah.
and then,
And pretend you're wedging them under, and you're just
yeah.
bringing those two into view. And then if you watched on loose, you could have your palm, your hand straight. When you drop your hand down like that, they just drop down into it. You know, use gravity to make them fall behind your watch, between it.
Yeah. Whoa. Or if you're moving your hand up to show that you're gonna place it in your palm.
Your hand would wedge in them, maybe.
Yeah, would that is that enough? That might be that's enough to push it in.
Yeah,
Maybe.
it is. If you tilt your hand at a right angle, like a high five, Jake's saying, it'll and the
Sorry, yeah.
pieces are forward towards the wrist, then they can be pushed back in with the hand. Yeah, that would totally work.
Interesting. This is kind of cool.
It's
I've
all, do you know, because the reason I was thinking that was when you first said about it, I was thinking about the Jeff Goldblum movie, you know, the old The Fly. When you know one object transposes into another
Yeah.
using the machine, so I was thinking like a time machine.
The what
Oh,
I
that's a cool name. Sorry, being rude.
No,
So this
no.
is a time machine, yeah, but it doesn't go back in time. It transposes. because it's but it's a machine made out of time. So it goes from
Ah,
my time to
oh,
your time. Time flies.
time flies. It's
Time
like
flies.
three layers deep, man. Fly,
Yeah.
time flies.
Yeah.
What's kind of cool about it is some people get a little bit skeeved out, not skeeved out. Some people get a bit nervous about doing anything with like loading things
Watch.
on other people and watches. You've got all like the you've got every reason to be holding their hand if you're, you know, if you're placing it, you're showing them what to do, how to place the card, and you've got every opportunity to deposit a card
Yeah.
hidden underneath their watch. That's quite beginner friendly.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not afraid of doing a card load. But then, what the fuck was? Oh, what a fucking stupid, shitty brag that was.
I'm not afraid of doing a
And,
card
no, I
load.
mean, it's like no one should be afraid of doing it. But then I was thinking, then, well, yeah, actually, it is scary to do it when you haven't done it before. I'm trying to think, what's an alternative to a card load that's a lot easier?
That would still have a kind of physical element to it.
Yeah, maybe, yeah, on the body without them knowing, so you can get it on them without them knowing. Because you could fold it up and it's got double stick tape on one corner, so you can stick it to the back of their palm. That's easy as, that is day one easy.
Yeah.
Because then the trick could be that you place a card face down on their palm, and then you say, I'm going to place a card folded up on the back of my palm. And, maybe you could wave your hand over, and now that card vanishes off the back of your palm. And the other thing is, you don't want to just see that it's just stuck on there. That's the only stupid part to me. It's like, oh, no, it's. You stuck it there. I don't like that. I wish they could like cover their part. Somehow it's not just stuck.
What is a way that is still a like physical representation of what has happened? Now that I'm thinking about it, it's kind of hard to have something that is as decent as that watch idea.
It could be even be as simple as you place a card in their hand in between the hands sandwiched, right? Then you take another card and you fold that card up, put creases in it, and unfold it. So now you can see there's a cross in the middle made out of creases. Then you wave it back and forth, it changes visually, but also it's straightened out.
Yeah.
And now the card in their hand, it's changed, but when they look at it, it's also folded up too. And they would swear that it never had the creases in beforehand.
That's pretty cool. Because I really like that idea of like what I do happens to what you've got. You
Yeah.
could even just do that with, you know, the way you hand a card to someone. They, if they're holding it out, or if it, however they're holding it, they might not know that a corner is torn.
Yeah, because you could put like a burn on it as well or something. Yeah, you
That's
can put it in such a way that they won't see it's burnt on the corner or torn, like you said. Phone ringing, hold on.
this
My phone's going crazy.
is, you've switched your phone off airplane mode now, and all hell is
Yeah.
visiting.
Yeah. I do love the two. I mean, what? Maybe we're going too deep into it in terms of that stuff. What if it's like, how can we make a simple two-card transpo? I'm remiss to say great again. But,
Yeah, bad optics.
is it as simple as hold both your palms out? I'm going to place the two on your left hand and the three on your right hand. Snap. And now the three is on your right hand, the two is on your left. Like, that would be fucking lovely if it was that clean. But there's also something I always contend with, which is in the two card transpo, is that, and this is the reason why I don't do the two card signed version a lot anymore, is that unless they see that card change or the
Yeah.
time in which that card changes is quick, so there's not a lot of time delay between that, a lot of people can be confused with which cards they are holding anyway. So if I put a two in your hand and then I show you a four over here, then time goes by, you could question whether you have a two or a four. Or in the example that I use for the impromptu signed version, I show a seven over here. face down. I'll come back to it later. I'm going to give you a queen, and I'm going to pick up the seven face down, but you can't see the face of it yet. And I'm going to tell you it's changed. But now look in your hand. Now you've got the queen, and I've got the seven. And it's kind of like, did I have the seven anyway, or was that did you? You know what I mean? The
Yeah.
best or most effective performance of it, or at least in some way, is either like the signing is always good, and they're seeing this signature. But to be able to show like, here's a seven, it's now a queen immediately. Like, oh, okay, because they can't forget what was in their hand then.
Yeah.
You know, so there's, I think the important, sorry, just to reconfirm, is that like an important detail should be the quick change of it at some point. And I might be wrong on that. Like a lot of people may argue and say it's not, but I do find like from performance variants of French Kiss, two card transpose where you don't see it, you know, conceptual type of ones, the ones that are the most effective, the ones where they don't have to remember the trick or remember where
Yeah.
they were in the trick. You know, it's about that instant moment.
Yeah, that's fair.
I am always and that moment doesn't have to be like a shapeshifter change or an Erdnase change. It can still just be a turn it over, turn it around, turn it back over. It's new card. Like that is still a color change, and it's still a quick color change. And I sometimes do wonder whether visual is like a shapeshifter versus just a double lift color change. Which one's stronger? Because there's a whole discussion that we covered a long time ago, which is, and I think this is in the psychology of magic as well. I think it is. What's more impressive? Seeing, or maybe the jerks don't even talk about this. Seeing the card change to the audience, is that the best thing? Or not seeing the card change because it gives the mystery. Like, for example, I think the example the jerks use is like showing somebody a perfect color change with a flap card, right? With a really well made perfect flap card, right? But it's so perfect that, you know, it can't be real. And then the card switched out nicely. But if you show them like a double lift and then you hold it away from the deck, wait a moment, and then it changes, suddenly the mystery is in the air a bit. You know, it's in the ether.
Yeah. It always shocks me how even the slowest and crappiest in my case, like twirl change, shocks people. Is it a
Oh
twirl
yeah.
change? I don't know what the hell they're called.
Yeah, I've always called it a twirl change. I don't know, but somebody, you know, there'll be a credit on it that a credit someone's done a credit on, and then somebody will show up that they, you know, somebody will find that they were wrong on that in 100 years.
It always
Their whole life
shocks me how
continues.
well that plays, even if it's bad.
Yeah, it does. It does, because we see things at a highly slowed down speed because we're watching them on repeat over and over and over and over again. And when people see the twirl change for the first time, they are mostly seeing the twirl change for the first time, whereas our eyes are seeing it for the 10,000th time.
Yeah, I always hated that point that people will bring up sometimes. Well, oh, well, technically it's not perfect because look, it's a different finger that's holding that part now, and people will notice that. No, they won't.
Yeah, they
No
don't.
one ever
No,
does.
they don't.
It's a
Yeah, they
moment that's
don't.
gone so quick.
There are definitely people in the world that are going to get caught doing that, but I guarantee you they ain't the people that are performing a lot of magic, you know, and they're not the people that are getting the 10,000 hours in. It's normally people that are day one, you know, beginners, or just, you know, just don't have it.
Yeah.
That's something that doesn't get spoken about. That there's a like a like I am self-admitted that I'm not a great performer. It's just not one of those things that I'll ever be. And when I could put 1 million hours in, I'm not going to be one of the greats in terms of performing magic. And I know that. But there's a lot of people out there that like I also know that my profession could never be bike riding. Yeah, just never that thing. There's a lot of people that do a lot of like performing and critiquing of magic that just don't have it, you know?
Yeah.
And they
Yeah.
say, oh, you get caught on the twirl change. Like, yeah, but you qualified to say that.
It's a strange world we live in, my friend. Every single Facebook comment just is completely wrong. I don't understand how it can be.
You want to talk about something spicy?
Go ahead. That's not the point of this podcast, but let's delve our
It's a
feet into these
creatively spicy
waters.
topic, not a drama spicy topic.
Yeah, let's go.
Did you see the Akan performed on Penn and Teller?
Oh yeah, what was the lady's name? I can't remember her name.
Rebecca Becca,
Is it double barrel last name or something?
Edward Hart or something like that. Yeah, it's not, sorry, it's not creative in drama terms. It's creative, it's spicy creatively. Did you see the trick? I'm guessing you got the method straight away, right? You get the method?
I assumed a method. I don't know if I'm right or not.
Okay. Should we? I mean, somebody has put a very highly watched YouTube video out, and their conclusion is exactly what my conclusion was. And in any forum that's discussing this, they've also shared that video. So I don't think we are not okay to talk about it, but maybe we'll just
There's
say
not
it
going to be
in
any
the
layman
loosest
listening to this
terms.
podcast.
Oh, fuck no. No fucking layman listen to this. Jesus Christ. Right. Okay. So to anyone listening, go and pause this podcast right now, but to search out the ACAN by the lady named. I think. Let me see if I can find it in my YouTube search history quickly. And if I can't, then I'm just going to say Rebecca. Just put in Rebecca Akan, Penn & Teller Foolers. Yeah, I can't find it in my search history. Rebecca Akan Foolers, Penn & Teller. It was created by Martin Hart, actually, it says. And so I'll talk to you about what I'll get into the bit which I consider spicy. Right. So performs the most perfect Akan you've ever seen. Two spectres up on stage, spectre to A, spectre to B, a man and a woman, and Penn & Teller in the audience. She says to the woman, the deck's on the table, jumbo deck of cards, so it can't be manipulated. She's very clear on what she's about to do. And it's very simple. Says the lady, can you name a card? The lady says, six of spades. She asks the man to name a number. He says, 47. And then the cards are the jumbo cards, so there's no manipulation, very clearly turned over one by one, and the six of spades is at 47, absolutely perfectly. Right? And it fooled Penn & Teller. The method, I don't really think we need, well, we have to talk about the method to talk about what the spicy topic is. But basically,
And just pause again once more. It's Emily Robinson Hardy, just in case you couldn't find
where did I
Rebecca.
get Rebecca from? I
Rebecca
think.
Herrera was on Penn and
Yeah,
Teller.
she was also by. So Martin Hart also created her routine. Well, it looks like Martin Hart finds British women and he trains them up to become representatives of magic. And I think that's like one of his things.
Industry
Gets a lot of
plant,
like.
joking.
Well, no. Well, talent shows do that. They will find someone to be
Boy
the face. It's
bands.
what boy band. Yeah, it's just a thing. So, method was in the shortest, least exposure-y way possible. That the woman named the card. When the microphone was passed to the gentleman or held out to the gentleman, he said a number and the audience said 47. So it matched perfectly. Now, to the lady on stage, she her card was the one everyone heard. She may or may not have picked up on it, right? The male member of the audience, and sorry, the male spectator or participant, he you could you see the moment when he's a bit shocked that it's not the number he says. He does a little double take, and also the performer says, "Do not react before you know." Blah, she primes everybody to not she primes the two spectators to not react when they're experiencing this. So the spicy thing is. Because a lot of people debating over whether they're stooges, instant stooges, are they classed as defined as instant stooges, or blah, 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 blah. The question that's up for debate is that guy did not have a magical experience. He was a bit, I don't know, I potential. I feel like if he was there to see some wondrous magic. And they asked him to go on stage. Hey, when you come on stage, you'll be a good spectator for us. Thanks, great. Just, listen to the magician's words carefully and follow everything she does. You'll be fine. And then he goes, okay, my number's 17, because the lip reader found out he said 17. And it comes up, and he said, four, and he's like, oh. Now, the spicy question is, right, sorry. Penn and Teller were fooled. The audience were fooled. That man had magic ruined for himself.
Yeah, with dual reality without dual reality.
dual reality without having a trick. It was just the exposure of a trick. And he was almost forced to go along with it because of the pressure of the lights in the studio, right? But everybody else seen the miracle. And when he goes and sits down, it's going to be like the patient zero. I can't imagine somebody. Well, there's you don't know anyone, but let's just say an average person would sit back down their seat. The round of applause goes for the trick. Wife says, or his friends say, "That was amazing," or "That didn't sound like you." And he goes, "I didn't say 47." And then everyone goes, "Oh, what?" Around them, because I've been, I don't know, not 1,000, probably 500 theaters. When people talk, like you hear around them, there's no getting away from that. So what I'm saying is, parts of that audience had that trick spoiled and magic spoiled in a way, right? But does that matter?
Yeah, I mean, it is a very strange one because there is routines that I can think of that you would do maybe in like a community club or a pub that involves dual reality, where the person you performed to knows for a fact that what you say happened did not happen, or they, if they go speak to their wife or their partner or whoever, their version of what happened is very different to what the audience saw. And is that any different just because it's like a couple of thousand people in a Las Vegas theater? It's a pretty
I don't
accepted
know.
methods that are out there that involve dual reality for stuff, even just, a PK touch routine, stuff like that. But
I
it
was
is
thinking
very
of it.
different because there is, I don't know.
I mean, she was there with the sole purpose of fooling Penn and Teller. Mission accomplished. And they have magicians talking about this all over the world. Surprisingly, on like the Genie forums, there's a bunch of people who can't figure this out or didn't figure this out. Like Richard Kaufman's first guess is wrong. And to, you know, so it's so it proves that the trick worked. You know? For me, I don't know, I seemed like see-through, but anyway.
I saw someone comment that they were at the recording, and they said she had to do it twice because there was mic troubles the first time.
Oh wow.
I don't know if they might be chatting shit, but I saw someone
No,
comment that.
I know lots of performers that have had to do their routine twice on Penn and Teller for different multitude of reasons.
Yeah.
So the question is, it's like sacrifice, isn't it? If you have to have a sacrificial lamb to create a miracle.
Yeah. The needs of the few, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few.
Every miracle needs a sacrifice to the deity gods, but that's
Yeah,
the
it's a
same
tough one. I mean, that when you see the discourse around it, there were a bunch of theories that were floated that are almost like auxiliary to what the method appears to be, where it was like, well, yeah, but maybe he himself was part of the effect, but someone else recruited him, so it's not technically a stooge. Stuff where it's like there's workarounds within workarounds.
Yeah, I know. So I've seen some discourse over the topic of the only reason they got to the method was that the effect was so perfect, there was no other option it could be. And then when they finally looked into that as the option of the method, that's when they clocked it.
Yeah.
There was a couple of people saying that. But I looked on like Reddit. There's a Foolus Reddit subreddit. So /r/Foolus. And there was some lay people in there that some person said like they'd been thinking about the trick for 4 days and finally gave up and come and read about the discussion to find out what the method was.
Yeah.
So lay people were watching it with no clue, and then other lay people are commenting on the in the sub in Reddit saying they were commenting to share the method because they'd figured it out.
Yeah. It's a, when I first saw it, I was interested because I've been playing with an ACAM that was similar, but in the sense that it used billets and stuff to essentially accomplish the same kind of method.
Oh man, I need to show you something. I'll send you a screen recording of I won't talk about it on here, but I developed it 7 years ago. No. I was living in this house at the time, but I was working somewhere else. when I first started working with it, and it's in a similar vein but way more deceptive. But yeah, anyway, right. So I mean, the cool thing is that people are discussing it. The problem is that the method was, for me, the biggest piece of fooler, biggest fooling trick in history on there was Nicholas Einhorn's.
What did
Nicholas
he do then?
Einhorn's.
Because I don't watch it religiously. What was his?
It was he had he has three tables with food that are covered with big like metal, you know what they call the metal tops that
Oh
covers
yeah.
plates of food, getting hot. There was three different color tables, and three people are chosen from the audience. They each get given an envelope, and they can choose to sit behind each of the colored seats. When they open up the envelope, it says their name. It says, "Hi, my name's Daniel. I will sit behind the yellow table, and I will have curry for tea."
Yeah.
They can also switch the food up as well, or something,
Yeah.
and they get given the option to switch the envelopes. And it's just, it took me so long to work it out, and I still don't even know if I'm 100% perfect on the method. I think I am, but it's insanely good. For me, that type of trick is the best kind of fooler, because it's been years since I first saw it, and I'm still not 100% sure on the method.
Yeah.
You know, because there were so many layers to it that make it clever. That's the type of stuff that I think is good for lay audiences.
Yeah, I think you have to tread a very thin line where it's actually interesting enough for magicians to watch it, because a large proportion of the audience will be magicians. Well, at least a large portion of the audience that talk about it online will be magicians. But then, the audience that maybe pays the bills will be the general audience. So I do think you have to tread this line where you need to appeal to both. And there are a few that I've seen where it really, really did appeal to both. I'm just trying to think. I remember really thinking that like Wes Barker's Foolers was very appealed to both crowds. Even Eric Leclerc's Foolers was really like, it was fun for magicians and for the general audience.
So yeah, I mean, ultimately, the question I kind of was going trying to get to was like, is it okay to sacrifice a lamb for a miracle?
I mean, yeah, well, like we were saying, if that is someone who is not in any way related to the production and it has just had that element of magic spoiled for them, it's a bit lame, because they didn't get like a runner up prize of, what you usually would do in dual reality, where you just get maybe a lesser version of an effect.
That's the only thing for me, which is like, because it seems the guy Martin has been working on a perfect ACAM for years and years and years. He shares videos of it on YouTube, and it's not perfect, but it's close, and but it's done the job. But it's not perfect because that person, unless we're all wrong on the method, but that person didn't experience it, you know,
Yeah,
didn't
that's
experience
really,
it.
that's why I hesitate to say anything, because I'm still not 100% sure, because I've watched a few of the videos and stuff, and there are still parts of it, taking into mind that it is TV magic, so there may be cuts as well, but everyone knows that there are certain things that are cut out of Penn and Teller. So maybe there was expository stuff that was missed that revealed it a little bit more, but I'm still not, I'm maybe like 95% on what that method is. I'm still not 100%.
I mean, I'd wager 99.99%
Yeah.
that it's bang on, but just, you know, there could always be something else, one extra element we're missing. That being said, it would have been, I think, what would have made it a Nick Einhorn level of fooler goodness would be that the guy also experienced the type of effect as well.
Yeah.
You know, if there was a way that he could have experienced it, whether, you know, even like Tommy Wonder talks about hiding the method in the shadows, and you know, and I think this is also like, because one complaint for it was, it for the routine, was that it was very boring. Because in one sense it was clinical, but if there was more stuff added to it to hide some of the methodology, for example, and this is terrible, I'm just spitting out here, but you know this guy's been working on it for years. What if there was a way, for whatever reason, that the guy couldn't hear what was said? So, hey, we're going to take you, we're going to blindfold you, we're going to
Yeah.
put earmuffs on you
So no
so
one can
that
influence you.
no one can influence you in
Yeah.
any way, shape, or form. Say the number, it comes out 47, right? Now, if she's clever with the questions at the end, now, could you see anything in those blindfolds? Was the number written in front of your face? No. Did somebody tell you in the headphones what number to say? No. The number you named freely was completely fair. Yes. The cards have already been dealt by this point. Now, turn over the card. Okay, if that's the case, turn over that to the lady. Turn over that last card. Boom. Doesn't even get the option to say. And now that does also run into the problem of him having to speak, and then his voice is now fucked for whatever reason.
Yeah. Oh.
Is you know
Well,
maybe he's like the number's 47,
yeah.
and then he comes up 47. I said 17.
The yeah. I don't fully know, because obviously there there's guys who kind of vet stuff and say, okay, yeah, the method's clean, you can do
Michael
it.
Close, isn't it?
Yeah, that and so I don't fully know completely what the rules are around what they can do. And yeah, maybe there is still allowed to be an element of pre-show that doesn't actually involve any kind of stooging, where you can just listen to people's voices.
No, I think that'd be too far. Unless it was an AI that could create it on the spot, which there are AI that can take a small sample of voice and just match it as close as they can for a number. But that's for the creator the trick to make. But yeah, I mean, what I was saying is, if you could add something fun into the routine that could cover up that method so that you create something for that participant, and I don't think it would take too much pen and paper to get that idea out there, you know, just like already like the idea of blindfolding him and or putting headphones on him, even putting head even like right, we're going to cover your ears so you don't get influenced, or I want everyone in the audience to shout out another, we're going to cover your ears, so I don't know, something like that, so that there's a reason why he can't hear the number that he's just said out loud,
Yeah. Yeah.
because that's the moment. If you break it down, sorry.
No, go on.
If you break it down to its like most basic form, that's the issue. He should not be able to hear the number he said.
Yeah. Also, just because of what the perceived method is, I don't really, I think that is a trick that is only performed on Penn and Teller, which then to me is not like, it's a completely separate kind of trick, right? It's not
Yeah.
an effect that is performed. Well, maybe you could perform it, but it has been designed by commission to be performed on Penn and Teller, down to, the fact that there is a veil in front of the table is because you can get the aha, there wasn't anything under there. Like that is a trick that's been designed with different intentions in mind, which does make it a little bit different to anything else.
Sorry, can you hear me? Is my audio good?
Yeah, it went off for a second, then I'm not sure what that was.
It's still off now. Yeah.
It's
Let
going
me
on and
reconnect.
off.
There we are. Yeah. Another method could be that, like, say you bring him up and you have a big whiteboard that swivels around on wheels. You have two of them. She writes her card on one away from the audience. He writes his number on another one away from the audience, or a chalkboard, whatever. She turns hers around, the six of spades. He turns his around, and the number is 47. Now, obviously, this chalkboard that he uses is one of these electronic ones that can switch the number out, right? So he doesn't ever see what the audience sees. And maybe there's just some clever wordplay that your magician could just, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. It just didn't have the cherry on top moment for me, because there
Yeah.
could have been a way to make it feel like you absolutely could have made it feel like he had an effect experience as well.
Yeah, I get that. I'm just trying to think of ways around it and stuff like that. And there's a world where you keep him blindfolded, and the cards are count.
Send him off to Baghdad.
Yeah, the cards are counted, and when you get to like the 47th card, it comes out, but then you carry on counting ways so that he hears something that isn't there, if you know what I mean.
Oh. Okay, right. I'm with you on this. Jake, what if it's it's I mean you just count from a different end of the deck, right? But let's say for example, he's also they both have headphones on, so they can't hear anything. I'm blindfolded. So we've got two participants here. We've blindfolded them, we've put headphones on them, so that there's no way on this earth, any way, shape, or form, that they can be influenced by any of you out there. You can't shout anything to them, you can't hold fingers up to them to indicate numbers. I'm gonna lift the headphone up and say name a playing card. So she does name a playing card, okay? Or maybe you have it on an envelope that says a piece of paper, name a card, right? Does that. Participant two, name a number. 47. Okay. And now you say, nobody give anything away, but we're going to deal through the entire deck face up. Slowly. So, da, 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 and they see six of spades, 47, but they continue to through the end of the deck. I'm not really sure where I'm going with this, but the idea is that neither of them are going. And then you say, like, when you go home, both of you will get this recording, and you can see if it worked out right for you both, and the audience. You know what I mean? Something like that. But they generally do get the recording of the deck being dealt face up in the exact order, or maybe they can take a photo of it or something. You know, and they can count. Go home, count, see if your card's at the number, and then.
It's interesting thinking of looking at doing magic in a different way, because like I said, creating a magic effect for Penn and Teller or a talent show is very different than creating it for something else, especially if for Penn and Teller, what you're aiming to do is very different than if it was just a stage show. So it's weird trying to think your way around these little rules, and there's definitely something there that where you're counting out the full deck very quickly. And that kind of enables there to be a dual reality.
Yeah. Because maybe it's like you tell, I'm thinking like the guy that has the guy that says 47, maybe you also ask him to think of a card as well, but not name it. And the woman that names a card, ask her to think of a number as well, but not name it. And then you ask him, does he see? So I'm going to deal through the entire deck in a minute for both of you. So you'll both see the same deck of cards, and the audience will see the same deck of cards. You two don't react at the minute if you see your card at your number, just in case. But we'll just try this for the audience at home. So then a deal to the deck, one, two, three, four, five, six, seven, all the way through. They'll get the audience will react. Six of spades, 57. Wow, they go crazy. These two are not reacting because they haven't seen their cards at their numbers yet. And they're not supposed to really. It's just a collective idea. But then the guy's not focusing on the fact that he hasn't seen 17. You know, that makes sense, right? So, right, we're gonna bring two members of the audience up. Okay, that's what we're going to do, Jake. Bring two members of the audience up. We're going to have some fun with them. We can't let them be influenced by any of you out there. So we're going to put blindfolds and headphones on them so that nobody can show fingers. They can say anything, blah, 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 blah. I want both of you, though, before you put these headphones on, to both of you think of a playing card and both of you think of a number. Okay? Sit down here. We've got two cards in my hand. I'm going to mix them up face down, face up, face down. One says card, one says number. Person A, whatever's on this card. One of them's a ball, one's a Rubik's Cube. If you catch the Rubik's Cube, you're going to think of the card. If you're going to name the card. If you catch the ball, think of the number. Or you're going to name the number, right? So, person A, name six of spades. Person B gets the Rubik's Cube because they're blindfolded and, headphones on, so they can't read a card, they can't hear anything. Okay. So he says the card, the number that he's thinking of, right? Okay. Boom. Headphones off. So you said a card, you said a number. But you're both thinking of cards and numbers. Thank you very much. Go back to your seats. The rest is going to happen for the audience at home. You know, I'm going to deal through every single card of the deck right to the very end. Ah. Oh. Unless you get him to think she said. What if they both said a card and a number? Or they think they say a card and a number. So he thinks the number 47 was chosen by her.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I'm with you. I'm following along.
So if he thinks she said the number 47, and she thinks he said 47, there can't be too much. If they're both, it's quite fun, the idea of blindfolding and thingy and putting headphones on two spectators. I think that could be make that could actually enhance the routine. You know, because that was the one complaint that I see online is that it was so boring.
Yeah.
And I get why, because it was more of a clinical routine. It was more of a science breaking routine, you know, like,
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
yo, this is the test condition. So no discrediting to the creator whatsoever. But that, yeah, if he thought she said the number, then he wouldn't be. How would that play out? Okay, she says six spades, 25. He says 47, 18. Now 47, three of clubs. And then maybe you hold up two plaques. One says card, one says number. You're going to mix them up. You hold it up to the audience and you say, these guys don't know whether we're going to use his card and her number or her number and his card or vice versa. But you guys do. And the number is 47, six of spades.
Yeah.
So he wouldn't have anything in that. He'd be th would he would it be so confusing that he's like, okay, cool. Or is he thinking, hang on, that's not my card or my number?
It's hard to say. I was just thinking then, and there's probably already a million routines that involve it, but if you have a deck of cards in stack and someone names a card and a number, and say they name 47 and whatever the card is, I'm shit with my I'm shit
Seven
with
of
Mario.
spades. Seven of spades.
And okay, so say they named like 17 and then something else. Is there any kind of algorithm that works out what, well, you know, the card that would have to be cut to, if you could then influence an ACAN that happens before their ACAN. So it's like, okay,
Oh,
seven. Go on.
I say no more. I need to show you something.
Okay.
A video.
And you know,
I'm
like
gonna put this
split the
on tape.
difference.
Don't say anything. I don't want people to go off and create this by
Okay.
accident.
I can edit it out if you want.
No. I'll show you. Here we go. Let me show you this. It's called. I won't even tell you the name. I'll give you the video link right now.
Okay.
But it's basically that.
I shall
Oh
watch it.
God!
We
Look how fat I am in this video. I'll send it to you on WhatsApp.
want me to watch it now, or do you want me to watch it after?
Watch it after. You want
Okay.
to? Funny because I knew exactly where the file was as well.
I
Which is awesome.
accidentally like given away
No, no,
two
no.
tricks of
You
yours
know,
twice this episode?
there's a great thing though where you're getting Ben Francis has one of the best ACANs I've ever seen. Have you seen his ACAN?
I don't think so.
Oh, it's fucking good.
I'll have to ask him.
Really fucking good. She's one of the owners of the Oracle Bar for anyone listening. Yeah. I won't say no more.
Yeah, I'll no, I'll
Anyway, I
ask.
think that's enough discussion and creation. We've been going for a long, this is an extra long episode, I think, man.
Good, the people
Hour and a
deserve
half.
it.
They do. They do. I don't even know. When was the last episode we published?
Dude, I don't know. I think it was episode 47, and it was like 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago.
Let me have a look. If it was 47, six of spades, what? Blackout Podcast was the last one was bought by oldest. No, newest to oldest. Oh, no wonder, right. 47 on the 10th of April. 20 days. So 3 weeks.
Lucky
It's the
sods.
31st.
Oh,
We
well.
miss you all.
So, are you going to be back at it now, Lloyd, or will you have another excuse next week?
Well, as long as Katie doesn't break her other fucking ankle.
I feel like Craig now begging you to come on the podcast.
Mate, I was genuinely ill. I wasn't very well.
I know how he feels, the poor bugger. You've never got time for us
I
anymore.
actually shit my pants as well, so maybe it's
Okay,
that.
I'll let you off. Well, thank you for
Anyway,
waiting.
folks, we've loved chatting to you. We've missed you. I've missed you so much. It's been good. It's feeling cathartic. It's been real.
Good, good man. I hope everyone's doing okay. Any questions that have been sent in or anything like ideas people have sent in, we will get round to them. We just needed an episode to clear out the pipes.
To reclimatize, yeah, to
Yeah.
readjust. We back. Anyway, till the next episode, which will be episode 49. Ah!
Closer
Then
to the
we'll
full
see you
deck.
all. Yeah, we'll see you all very, very soon.
Peace.
How do I stop this? I've forgotten how to press stop.
Oh, that's it. You're stuck in the podcast now.
Maybe we just stay on here for a little bit.
Forever.
You're not getting rid of us this easy. Oh, here it is. Found stop button.
Go
Fuck
join the
that.
Facebook group.
Oh yeah, theblackartco.com. Check it out.
Peace. Bye.